Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is episode 75 of the Van Hemlock Podcast, part of the Virgin Worlds Collective. Hang in there, we'll get the 100.
Big number. Can we quit at 100?
I don't know. I'll have to have a long talk with myself and a reckoning and a look back and see how we've done, I think, when that approaches.
Actually, going by other shows, we should start hyping our 100th episode now.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be really big.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a huge production budget.
Yep.
Cast of 1,000.
Dancing.
Yeah, it's all that.
And ice.
On ice. Excellent. Oh, we'll just get on with what we're playing, shall we?
Okay, you can go first.
I'll go first. Yes, well, let's talk Lord of the Rings. You abandoned us this week.
I abandoned us.
You were busy doing something more important, apparently.
Yes. I was looking at an independent game.
Oh, fair enough. The work for you, isn't it? You're never off duty. Well, so this week... Well, previous week, we... I'm trying to think where we got to now. We were crashing through Illuminus, weren't we? Doing the... that was fantastic.
We flipped all the control points.
We flipped all the flags. Happened. Big server announcements. A heroic band of adventurers has done a thing.
We didn't get a server announcement.
Yeah.
Did we?
Or was it, maybe in zone-wide. It was definitely big orange text came up each time we conquered one of those flags. I logged in later in the week on my own, and there was a big global buff in effect. 5% morale and some less. I think it's less item wear and some extra morale.
Just for the city, or
no? For the whole world. I was in the Shire at the time, and so I reckon if you flip the flags there and the ones in Forrochell, that probably applies to the zone. Then. But we only did the Illuminus stuff. Lots of basically crashing through the city, accidentally conquering areas of it, as is our usual wont.
Accidentally slaughtering people that we think, oh, I bet we have to kill him later.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that always in Lotro. It's I'm always afraid of exceeding the mission orders, because sooner or later we're going to have to come back and do exactly what we did again, but this time it will count, you know? The bane of MMOs. We conquered all of those. There wasn't really much in the way of advancement on the actual books, though, was it? I think we had a different thing to do.
We got a bit through the book.
Oh, okay.
No, we got through, and then we got to an instance, and it was getting late.
Instances
when it gets late, otherwise we all get cranky.
Yeah, and start making mistakes and so on. But we're
start making mistakes.
We'll start making them on purpose then. Yeah,
yeah.
I think we're on chapter 5 of book 10 of volume 1 for those playing along at home. Then the week after you disappeared,
yeah.
So we spent the week getting James, our new champion, caught up. That's all good now. We're all ready to move on. We've all got our books
Excellent.
Filled in at the back, so that's good. And then we went and did some really stupid stuff. Right, first of all, we went to Eregion, you know, the big deed you've got to do. God, like a million quests to unlock the fast travel to Moriah. Well, did some more of that, and that was good. And then we found ourselves at Mirabel, which is the big city at the bottom corner. And there's a couple of instances there. And there's some three-man instances there. And there was four of us. So we decided to duo with two teams of two going at this three-man instance.
Now, I'm one of your healers. Who was the other person who was missing?
The other person who was missing was Matt, who's our runekeeper, who did a very good job on the end of Book 5, by the way, the Nazgul, Fire and Ice, all that. He was primary healer there and did quite well. Seems to be the runekeeper has more in the way of regens than straight heals, so it was more of a... Well, there's a sort of certainly a different kind of style to have to adopt to do it. And also, we were fairly overleveled for the place. But, yeah, it seems like you're not absolutely indispensable. Which is good to hear. We basically decided... Well, I went with the Hunter. So we had a Hunter and a Guardian in one, and there was two champions in the other. No healing, no. And we did a lot better than we ought to, but not nearly as good as we needed to. It was that kind of thing. The champions had a far higher repair bill than our team, though, so I think we won on goal difference, I think.
Okay. Had a tank and a DPS, and they had two champions.
Yeah. No, our strategy was mostly a lot of hiding around corners, plinking them with arrows, laying traps, and then me desperately trying to taunt them, and occasionally on purpose detaunt, you know, letting the taunt go just so I can use the Hunter's health bar a bit as well. but, yeah, I mean, we did. It was going well till we came to the first Elite Master group, you know, with the little spiky. Yeah. And I was looking at that and thinking, God, how's three people meant to do this? I mean, I think probably it is three people, but one of them must be a healer. It must be a proper healer if we're going to do that.
That's it. We'll try it again.
Yeah. I think it's worth coming
back to. Being on your team with the Hunter.
Well, no. I mean, either of our champions is very good at tanking when required. I think it requires a bit of a respec on the traits and a slight adaption of, you know, pick up a shield, that kind of thing. But champion can sort of work as a fairly reasonable main tank as required. I'm not sure how it would work in large top-end 24-man raids. I think in those sorts of situations you need the class that is the best at each thing. But yeah, it's just reassuring to see that it's not always about you must have class X and you must have class Y or you are going to fail, you know? I mean, for tanking, the Guardian is the best, but champions can do well. I think captains can do a fair job at it as well, although they got nerfed because of that. And for healing, you know, the Runekeeper can do a fair job. I don't know if any other classes can step in and do that. I think Loremaster possibly can just about work as a healer in a pinch. So, and DPS, well, many classes have an alternate stance, which makes them do more damage. So it's good to see. I mean, yeah, obviously, it was just, you know, it became immediately apparent we weren't going to finish this thing, but we kept going because we're a bit stupid. But good fun, a lot of fun, yeah. And this week, I think we're going to be mostly earning lots and lots of cash to pay for the repairs from last time. So, now, I think this week we're going to be pushing on with the main story.
Might as well.
Yeah, crack on with book 10. See how we see it. Keep moving on through volume 2. Getting a bit worried about Mariah, though.
Why?
Well, by the time we hit it, we're going to be level 60, possibly even 65 by the time this expansion comes out, and we'll have out-leveled most of it, I think, and possibly missed some of it. It's just curious. I mean, I don't know what you're meant to do now, I suppose, because, you know, there were 15 books in Volume 1 before the expansion ever came out, and people had a very clear single path to follow. Now, it seems when you hit Book 8 or so, when you've done got to level 50, you can go two ways, really, can't you?
I think we're going to stop levelling. We'll just run out of XP doing this.
Well, I think there's... Yeah, I mean, we'll eventually everything will go green in the old world, in Eriador there, yeah. and Mariah will be the only place we can get XP.
Yeah, we'll go through the books. We won't be getting much XP from killing stuff.
And but then, I'm interested in the story, you know, following
And then
through.
We'll be fine for Mariah.
Yeah, so good times there. We're still all seem to be quite interested in it, still keen to follow it through and see where it all goes. Lots of good times there. Let's see, Guild Wars. We had a crack at Slaver's Exile this week, which is like the end game 4-part mega dungeon of the very end of Eye of the North. That was quite hard work. Again, that was two teams because we're sort of allied with another guild now, so we sort of share chat channels and they come along on Tuesday as well, and they're all a bit good. Yeah, they all sort of know what they're doing there. I think they follow us partly for the amusement value of our own slightly less experienced antics. Yeah, two teams for that. I was on the team that didn't do quite so well.
That surprises me.
Well, the other team managed three of these sub-instances in the time it took us to do one, and the one we did, it was really hard work. It's all Stone Summit dwarves, most of whom can have some kind of res ability, which means that just taking these groups down is really hard work because they keep just popping up again, and it becomes about exhausting their res signets. In effect, meaning you have to fight twice as many monsters, and they already come in like groups of about 8 to 12 at a time, and they're all level 24 to 28, and it's very difficult, very hard work. You need solid builds, solid team builds, where you sort of have an awareness of what the other people in your party are doing and try and sort of work in and out of that sort of thing. I think, yeah, we went in there with our usual, well, here's quite a good solo build, we'll see how it goes, sort of philosophy. We did get there in the end. I mean, to be honest, you can minus 60 DP these, but it takes a very, very long time. And I think many of our team weren't at minus 60 when we finished the boss, so that was good. As well as the evil dwarves, you've got evil elementals in this. So much fire damage. Oh, the burning fire. It was quite traumatic, really. But we got one ticked off, three to go. I'm not quite sure when we're going to be able to fit those in. But as long as no one throws the overall quest out, those ticks will stay there for as long as we need, really. So, yeah, and we got destroyer weapons, which are the big sort of... they're not significantly better than things you'll find in Worlders Drops, but they have really cool fiery lava skins to the models there, so they look the business, even if they... it's purely cosmetic. It's what Guild Wars does, you know, instead of... And I quite respect it. Instead of going all out with massive stats, or, you know, ever increasing plus 1% all the way up, you get to a cap very early on, about the same sort of time you reach level 20. And just like the levels isn't really the end, but it means you're fully functional and can do most of the challenges. It's the same with the equipment. You know, from the point onwards where you reach your first max armor and first max weapons, it, from there on, it's just very, very expensive and costly cosmetic upgrades, which, you know, convey a certain status but do nothing for you in game mechanics, which I quite respect. I mean, I buy into it anyway, because what else are you going to spend this money on? Well, apart from my own personal obsession with the Elite Skill Legendary Skill Hunter title, which basically requires me to have captured all the skills in the game. Very expensive, that. One platinum a go, and there's about 300-odd. So you're sort of working through those as well. So, yeah, still working through there. The PvP nights. Oh, well, we got the Halloween stuff, haven't we? Oh, I didn't mention the Halloween in Lord of the Rings either. That's all up there now. I've been picking away at some of that over the previous week. In my own time as well, not on a Monday.
I did some of that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get some of the masks.
Yeah, the Trickery and Troves people in each starter town there. You can talk to those. You have to go and talk to four other people and perform the appropriate emote for them. Quite tricky finding them all. I was referred to an excellent guide website there. If you go to nerfthecat@wordpress.com, Arbitrary's blog there, and there's links through to a fantastic guide to cover all these events. So it's all good if you're a bit stuck. And there's like bobbing for apples as well. I like the masks, some better than others.
I like the bunny one.
The bunny and the beaver ones are awful. I don't like those at all. They disturb me. Those are the elf and the human ones. I like the dwarf one, which is basically a bucket. It's the big bucket head. I think the hobbit one's got to win, which is basically literally a pumpkin that goes on your head.
Yeah, Matt does tend to wear that sometimes.
With a jester hat on it. I should be wearing that most of the time for the rest of the year. Is that going to be our new guild hat?
I think one of them should be the new guild hat.
Fair enough. Yeah, let's look out for that. The festival run as well. I got the new horse, the upgraded horse. That's fantastic.
It's got under lighting.
Yeah, well, no, it's got all like special blanket over it with tassels on and stuff, and it's black, which is obviously cool.
Yeah,
you need 40 of the fall tokens to swap for a festival run token, or you go to the Breefields thing and do the horse race, which apparently they fixed and have put back in, because that was out of action for quite a while.
That's out of action for ages, because apparently horse racing was too hard.
Now, well, it's all back in and it works. I actually raced against another person as well, which is a bonus. One of the strategies is to go, well, these tokens you get for winning the race, you can, if you don't win a race, you can also swap 40 of the normal tokens to get one if you're not any good at the horse
that
racing.
That doesn't sound fun.
It's a massive grind. And I thought, well, no, the easy way here is obviously to win the race. So you line up at the start, you wait, it goes every 10 minutes or so, and whoever's there when it kicks off, you have to basically race around those arches, jump over fences and stuff. And the chap I was racing against didn't realise you had to push space to jump the fences, so I lost him on the first turn, and that was it. It was plain sailing from there on, really.
So instead of horse racing, it's more like burnout.
Yes. Well, I did try and ram him off, but no, he just didn't realise you had to jump the fence to continue around the course. He was like, got a bit snarled up on it. I felt bad, you know, I offered to race him again in this time throw the race, but he ran off, so oh well. But yeah, you get a whole server-wide broadcast for that as well. My name was famous. That was great.
For 2 seconds.
2 seconds till the next person, yeah. But you get the token from there, and then I think you need another few of the normal fall tokens. And the thing is, you have to already have a horse. You've got to trade in your existing one.
It's not a cheap way of getting
one. You can't just get a horse if you're a brand new newbie. It basically takes your old one away and gives you a different skin for it. So that was good, all sorted there. I'm working on the little bits of furniture now. There's the usual collection of items to put in your lawn and in your little player house as well. So
it's all about the furniture.
Absolutely. They all got the kinship house, haven't we?
Yeah. decorating nightmare.
Yeah, it's an explosion in a taxiderm. It's like a museum of natural history, that place, at the moment. It's
the first day was brilliant as we all turned up and dropped as much rubbish as we had.
Yeah. Desperately searching for enormous yard plot items to go in there. That's all good. So back to Guild Wars then. The Halloween event there it hadn't actually started last time I played, which was the last Tuesday, but it should be on now. Guild Wars tends to have quite short seasonal events, but I imagine the Mad King Thorn will be doing his appearance this coming Halloween weekend. Basically, you just stand there, listen to his appalling, but at the same time so bad it's good, stand-up routine, and then I think he just kills you all at the end of it all. He plays this Simple Simon game where you have to do the things he says, and if you don't, he'll kill you when you're there for the big event. And at the end of it all, there's a choice of two different masks available. I haven't seen what the masks are this year, but I got a fantastic scarecrow mask one previous year that I treasure quite highly. Also, there'll be the costume brawl. It's sort of a weird random pickup. It's like random arenas, but you get to play as an NPC, and you get a sort of preset skill bar given to you before you go in. Depending on what your class and character's gender is, you'll end up as a particular in-game personality, and it'll have a preset skill bar. I think that's a weird sort of 5v5 PvP match with shrines in it. Must have to give that a go. But and that's all for Balthazar points, as usual, as all things PvP are. But yeah, and there'll be, I think there's drops of absinthe in world as you're playing through, so lots of Halloween goodness there. There was City of Heroes. This week we're working on the villains, and I got the... Oh, I talked about Wormhole before, didn't I? No real comedy power this time, although it did level up a few. I got a big jump in the air, spin around, an AoE energy melee smash thing that looks quite spectacular.
So how does that one annoy people?
That one doesn't. That one's quite disappointing, really. That one actually helps the team in a productive and useful manner, yeah. I know. I just run in to where the brute is and lay in with my own melee damage.
Doesn't sound fun at all.
Well, it was trick or treat this week. It's the old knocking on the doors and running away thing. Only you get badges for killing the stuff that comes out of the thing. So we were basically at this one particular block of buildings in, I think, in Shark's Head, where there's three doors, and we were basically just working door one, door two, door three, door one, door two. And this one building kept ejecting huge amounts of monsters. I can only imagine it has an underground tunnel connecting to it, because the building wasn't big enough to house the number of monsters we murdered that extended session.
Maybe there was a clown car parked just inside.
I don't know. They just kept coming out and going, whoa, we're big monsters, and they're getting absolutely murdered by our precision monster grinding setup. There was the giant monsters were showing up as well. The Eochai, which I believe is the giant pumpkin head guy. And I don't think Jack in Irons showed up when we were there, but he then sort of giant. If you can imagine a giant garden gnome with chains all over him. And these are really, really big monsters. They got purple health bars, and they require about 10 to 20 people all wailing on it for about 5 to 10 minutes to take down. Special badges for those, of course. They're really quite good, actually. Good sense of camaraderie as everyone piles in, you know, all uniting against the common badge. They had a new thing this year as well. Every so often, a particular zone will report supernatural activity, and four banners appear scattered around the map. And it requires the whole zone to coordinate and secure these banners while a timer goes down for each one. And then at the end of the timer, you have to destroy the banners. And it sort of takes... Again, these are sort of giant monsters that are giant monster-grade banners that are spawning all sorts of other monsters too. And it's sort of just quite heartening to see the whole zone broadcast chat coordinate and everybody work together to get this thing done. And again, more badges. I think it's one badge for each banner and another badge for destroying the uber giant monster that shows up at the very end. So, and that was new. That's good. I think they had the usual zombie uprisings appearing throughout the game as well. Every so often they'll just throw the zombie switch and zombies will appear out of the ground around it, all players in the zone.
Damn zombies.
You have to gather together to deal with them all. It's all very Left 4 Dead. Yeah, so that's all good stuff. DDO. Playing a lot of DDOU this week. I don't know what their Halloween event is, by the way. I imagine they probably do have one, but I'm such a noob in there, I didn't really know or work out how to find out. Yeah, we've got a fairly good little static group going there. There was we were doing some stuff around the harbour and the marketplace, sort of various instance dungeons. Got a fairly robust group going there. We got a bard, we got a paladin, I think there's a cleric, a rogue, and I'm a ranger. And I think the guild there, it's the old problem, isn't it? It's we have 9 people. How do we make that work when the group size is 6? So there was a bit of sort of swapping in and out and a bit of secondary grouping going on. It's all going well. I think the main problem in there at the moment is everyone needs to be getting their copper leveling sigils. This is the
You've hit the level cap, have you?
Well, the initial level cap is 4, and you have to either loot or buy from their item shop a special item that then unlocks your progress up to level 8, and then there'll be another one there, a silver one, presumably.
Has anyone got one of these yet?
Well, I got quite lucky with a quest reward list. When you finish the quest and hand it in, a big old window pops up with a huge list of things you can choose, and the sigils do seem to appear in those lists if you keep your eyes open, so that was quite lucky. I got unlocked and cleared for level 4. I'm at level 4 now. My ranger can summon a wolf. For a minute every 5 minutes as a sort of
you think once it turns up
pet.
It would hang around.
I know. Well, I'm very confused about editions of D&D and what currently is and isn't in the way it works, but I definitely remember rangers getting like a animal companion that follows them around and is certainly more than just a summoned creature, but apparently not, so I don't know. I'm very much out of touch with how D&D works these days. But yeah, we're having a good old time in there, actually. Just, I mean, something about... Because when I was playing the Cheap Seats thing way, way back, I did DDO, you know, I downloaded the trial, had a go, and I did certainly respect what they were trying to do, but clearly as a solo player, I just was not getting it. It's just no good for soloing that game. I mean, it's different now that you can hire temporary duration henchmen who can do the lockpicking or the wizarding or whatever, but going in there as a static group on a regular basis, it really does seem to click. It is the way to play that game, and I think it always has been. I mean, yes, certainly they've made concessions. They've made lots of solo dungeons available since launch. They've made these, yeah, you can hire assistants to come with you, NPCs, that sort of thing. But it really doesn't hold a candle to the proper going through it, doing these dungeons as a team and all that sort of thing. Just the hijinks that go on in our usual little team there.
I think that the license alone should be enough to tell you what you're getting.
Yeah, well, I suppose there
if they hadn't have done that,
there might be people who never played D&D paper before. But
if they hadn't have done it, I think they would have done it a massive disservice to
them. Yeah, it seems the right way to go, but it's not for everyone, I think. But certainly enjoying
it. It's for an awful lot of people now. They seem to like it now it's free.
I think this has really been a massive thing for the better for it, yeah. I mean, I really don't know what it was like in recent months before the DDOU thing came along and massively bulked up.
I guess a little bit empty.
Yeah, but then I suppose it's very much a question of the people, isn't it? I mean, it's a strange old guild we've put together. There's a lot of people from the Tuesday New Club in Guild Wars there. There's quite a few from the Lotro group have come along as well, you know, and it's all just sort of... It's always nice when different friends from different groups get on with each other, you know, which I've found is happening, which is good. But I think that's a goer. I think we'll be playing that for quite some time. I'm building up turbine points through in-game favour, so I'm not sure what to spend those on yet. I'm saving those. We'll see what... I think adventure packs is the way to go, though, rather than the particular... Mind you, as we're all approaching level 4 and some of us have not yet been lucky with the loot rolls on the end of quest payouts, it might be a question of having to splash out a bit. Mind you, it's like 30 points for one of the first sigil, because they're on offer at the moment. I think they're 50 points if they're not on offer. And you've earned that in favour by the time you got there. Well, I certainly have, just by not spending a penny. So it's been interesting to see how that all pans out in the longer term. And that's about it really for the MMOs.
So on to the important stuff.
Yeah, all right, here we go then, console roundup. So just
there goes the chair.
Broken your chair. Just Cause, still playing that. I'm determined to finish that, but I do start to think it's extending its welcome a bit, you know.
Yeah, it is a game which really does start to drag.
I'm sort of enjoying it, but there is a fair degree of repetition in the gameplay there. The taking over the outposts, dealing with the little Rioja safe houses and all the rest of it. And
I recommend you just go through the plot.
Yeah, I can take on the story missions anytime I like, but it's just this nagging sense when you look at the political map with all the red provinces open up, where the ones you're supposed to be dealing with liberations in, and thinking, well, no, how are my actions helping the people? You know, it's all very well being this shadowy government agent, just assassinate a few key military figures and then bugger off. But you know, you've got to be dealing with the grassroots as well if you're going to do a proper revolution, I think. So yeah, still picking away at that. It's getting quite hard though. They're sending tanks at me now. And those seem to one hit.
I can't remember if I came up with a way to deal with tanks.
No, well, I've been mostly trying to wait for waves of disposable revolutionaries to go in and draw their fire while I skirt around buildings and try and go for the blockades and flags. But
motorbikes. I use a lot of motorbikes.
Motorbikes. Oh, okay. Well, I've hard enough time driving as it is in that game, but we'll see. I like it. Yeah, I like it. I'm just wondering if it's a bit long or whether I'm making it excessively long or whether...
I
ought to have a lesser expectation of finishing it so soon.
The sandbox has too many repetitive things in there that it needed.
This is precisely the downside of a sandbox, exactly. If the sandbox has nothing but sand in it, then it's not awfully fun, is it? No. You've still got to have other stuff to do, even though it is an open world.
And these takeovers are incredibly repetitive. Mm. They just go there, get past checkpoint one, checkpoint
blow
two,
up barricade,
checkpoint
blow up
three.
Barricade.
Bomb,
yeah. Hit the flag, yeah. I mean, they're either settlements or they're military bases. The military bases are quite fun in a sort of surly, bitter kind of way because they keep sending tanks after me.
I quite like the city ones.
The cities are interesting, yeah. Real good urban house-to-house fighting sort of going on there.
I always grab a helicopter.
I tried that in the last city. I was hovering over the city, just bombing everything with rockets, and then I just got took out by other helicopters that just kept coming and coming in waves and waves. So, yeah, I think possibly satellite-based weaponry's got to be the only way to go forward with that.
I'm really looking forward to the sequel. Comes out next year. And it'd be good to see them fixing the problems that the first game had. It was a very early 360 game.
Oh, yeah, I'm going way back in time.
It was out on 360 and PS2, so it was that early. It'd be interesting to see how they fix the gameplay.
Slowly catching up with contemporary gaming, there was Assassin's Creed. I played quite a bit more of that now, actually.
Okay.
I'm very dubious about the whole blend mechanic, to be honest. I'm not convinced at all.
It works.
You just sort of, any time there's any guards nearby, you just sort of put your hands together and your head down and walk at a bit of a shuffle, and they think, oh, that must be a scholar who's carrying two swords and a thing across his back and a big red sash.
Works for me all the time.
Yes, I'd like to see you apply that in real life. Or sitting down on a bench, that totally flummoxes them. Where did he go? He's there, he's sitting down, that's why you don't recognise him.
He's still got the sword.
You've only seen him standing up, yeah.
he appears to be shorter, he's sitting down.
I like the sort of collection gameplay of the Eagle's Nest waypoint thing, where you have to sort of unlock bits of the map by getting to a vantage point and having a good old Batman brooding pose on top for a bit. I know about the getting down, though, the leap of faith. You just see this bit of wood sticking out and think, well, there's obviously going to be a haystack underneath that, and just fling yourself off.
I would really have done one that didn't have it. Just this one jump that you died every time you tried it.
Where's the haystack? Paff. Yeah. I quite like the way you sort of build up the clues to work on this one particular assassination in each section of the game.
Yeah.
It's sort of a little bit of detective work as you work your way around the city, and then the big sort of build-up main event. It's almost very cinematic, the sort of climactic finish.
It's quite repetitive, the sort of stuff you have to do.
Yeah, it'll either be a pickpocket or an intimidation or the other bit. But, I know, I'm enjoying it so far, but I'm wondering how many of these are ahead to fill the plot up, as it were. I must say, this whole Animus business is quite annoying, though. Well, it's not too much of a spoiler to say that the action doesn't take place. You're not actually there. You're investigating a genetic memory of your ancestors in surprising specific detail using this Animus machine that in some time period that's slightly ahead of it's slightly in the future of today, and you've been captured and they're exploring your genetic memories for some reason and using this machine to do so, which provides this fantastic get out and explanation for things like computer game HUDs and respawning and stuff like that.
It's almost on a level of no, that's not how it happened when you die in
exactly.
Persia.
Every so often, once you've done a thing, it'll just go all cloudy and say fast forwarding to more interesting memory, you know. So I mean, it works as a sort of couching device for the conventions of a normal computer game, but it's when I want to log off or when I want to finish playing. First, you got to quit out of your memory into the Animus area, then you got to quit out of the Animus, and then you're standing up and walking around this lab, and then you got to quit from there as well. So you got to quit three times if you want to get out of the game.
I'm hoping they fix that for the next.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't kill immersion totally to have a just quit completely out of the game bit straight from where you're the assassin. But still, I'm quite enjoying it. Very atmospheric, very well detailed world. I mean, you don't often see many games set in the Crusades, which is novel in itself.
I love the world in that game. I have spent hours collecting this stuff just to be in there.
Yeah, they're sort of wandering around the sun-dried hills, and it's a slight haze to it all. You feel like it's a dusty foreign land.
And the cities feel like they're cities.
Yeah,
it's hard to explain why, but they actually do feel like they are. They exist. They work.
I wonder if it's perhaps everyone shies away from the sort of the religious implications of dealing with the Crusades as a play field, you know. I mean,
what you mean, the big warning at the beginning saying,
oh yeah,
this was made by an interfaith team of people. We're not picking on any one particular religion, diverse cultures and beliefs,
you know, really trying to hammer home the point that they're not picking on any particular religion. But you got like Jews, Muslims, Arabs, you know, the Christians.
I mean, you do slaughter them all.
Yeah, and then you're a member of this shadowy other clan as well going on, and it's like everyone's a bad man and there's all sorts of enemies. I can see why you'd shy away from that and just do one in ye olde made up Middle Ages vania instead, you know, because you get away from a lot of those awkward labels, I suppose. But it seems to work, and it seems to be handled fairly intelligently. I haven't seen any outrageously bigoted viewpoints put forward by the game yet. You seem to assassinate everyone with equal disdain, to be honest. Can't say the main character's too likeable. He's quite arrogant, but I suppose that's part of the plot, really, isn't it?
I don't think you get likeable assassins.
No, I suppose not. But yeah, so enjoying that quite a lot. Still be playing that. There's Burnout Paradise. I'm Class B licensed at the moment.
Huzzah!
Yeah, still got some work to do before I can join the big boys and play with the real cars. Yeah. Yeah, been doing a few online challenges. They were quite good fun. And Kingdom for Keiflings.
Oh, I love
it. Well, we did talk about this extensively on a show way back when you first discovered it, and yeah. I thought, oh, I've got to get that. So, and so by implication of that, I had to then go and buy some Microsoft points, which then means that I then saw you in your blinking mummy rags Halloween avatar costume. I thought, well, I've got to get one of those. And so I'm really sort of falling quite far and quite fast into this whole console lifestyle. I know. And after the number of complaints I made about how expensive their cosmetic outfits for avatars were, and I still think they are, I still went and bought one in the end. So I'm a massive, massive hypocrite.
We've known that all along.
All right, smartass, why don't you tell us about what you've been playing?
Then? Well, since there have been no good games released in the last 2 weeks, I've not had 2 really good games a week to play.
Right.
4 brilliant games Fortnite.
Go on then, take us through those.
First of all, Brutal Legend.
Brutal Legend, yes.
Tim Schafer, Jack Black.
Yeah, we're all very, very positive about that.
Yeah. I read a comment about it. It's got the worst voice acting in any game. Now, this isn't Jack Black. Jack Black is brilliant. His role, he does that perfectly, just the constant one-liners and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's people like Lemmy from Motorhead. And Ozzy, who, you know, these people, for whatever reason, maybe lots of drink, lots of drugs, lots of abusing their vocal cords, can't talk anymore.
Mm. But, well, I think Ozzy sort of transcends that a bit and roles define themselves around him, but I'm not sure the same's true of Lemmy, no.
Yeah. It's got some brilliant... It's just nice having all these proper rockers in there.
Mm, yeah. You see a lot about that. But what's the gameplay like?
The gameplay?
Yes, apparently.
Well, it's got the world's best soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Okay, the gameplay. Now, it's a third-person run-around, drive-around game, which is also an RTS.
Yeah, I saw you actually doing some of these gigs, I believe. Is it stage shows?
Yes, You have big fights where you go up against people. Is that a plane or a doodle bug?
All right, well, let's just keep going. And if you hear the show suddenly cut out, you'll know which it was.
Yeah, and you then build up a stage, which is your builder unit.
Mm.
You have to capture fan pool points, things, like which is where your resources fans, come from. And then you
they
make
need merch booths built on them. Yeah,
then you make units and send them off to die. And it's an okay RTS. The controls are a little bit squiffy.
Mm, it's sort of integration with the third-person thing into the RTS battle. I think Sacrifice.
I have not
old shiny
that.
Entertainment title. It sort of dabbled with this a bit. And it didn't really click with me, but a lot of people thought it had this fantastic cult acclaim. But I just couldn't really get the hang of being a third-person person on the battlefield as well as having to direct units over a wide area. So it's sort of... It's quite a tricky thing to marry together. And you think it works well?
That bit works well. It's just purely the telling people to attack. Like, you might want to only send one type of unit to go in and attack.
And that
didn't always seem to go the way I wanted.
Well, something more traditional, where you're miles above the battlefield and drag selecting units with a mouse. That's a bit easier, is it?
Mm. But it's a fun RTS.
Right. That's the main thing, yeah.
Nothing I haven't managed to beat with anything other than a unit rush.
So perhaps not one for the RTS classic purist.
You're not going to spend 2 hours doing a complex backwards and forwards with your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Although there is an online mode for it as well where you can play.
Well, that might get a bit more hectic, yeah.
I've been too scared to go near that because I suck at RTSs
Fair
online.
Enough. But overall, it's a... quite polished experience. Yeah. Yeah.
It's an open world game.
Mm-hmm.
You're running around, there's secondary missions, things to collect, tracks to unlock.
All that.
And then there's this overarching plot, which, to be honest, did seem to... You get on it and keep going, and it was too easy to just follow the plot and not do the other stuff.
Didn't really give you enough now go away and do something else moments.
Yeah. Because I was quite enjoying the plot. Mm. And... It may have meant that the final fight was a little harder than it should have been because maybe I should have been off building up my character.
Up. Yeah, I see.
Awful at driving around in a great car. It's a Tim Schafer game, so it's got great humour in it.
Mm, yeah.
Which you'd expect. I'd be very disappointed if it didn't. It's very short, plot wise.
Right, I see.
But there's plenty of stuff in there to keep you busy and other stuff. So I don't know if that's actually a problem.
Mm, secondary activities and so on, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm not sure if it's destined to become a classic like his other games. But I'm also not sure if you can make a classic game anymore.
Interesting, interesting idea. Well, you mean the sort of going completely out of the box and coming up with something entirely innovative and different?
Well, or like Grim Fandango, for instance. People look at that and say that's a classic and it sits there on its pedestal.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how any game released now
because gets they're all on too similar to each other.
I'm not sure what it is. I think the quality of games at the moment is just too damn good. There's too many really excellent games coming out. To stand out above another one is almost impossible.
Oh, I see. So you think just the field in general has risen to such a high level that there is very little in the way of single isolated classics now?
Yeah.
Interesting. Because we have to revisit this on topic.
Yeah, because in the last couple of weeks, I've got more than a couple of contenders for Game of the Year being released.
I think perhaps we're moving to I suppose the distinguishing thing these days will be longevity rather than initial, you know, pizzazz. I mean, pretty much any new game you buy nowadays will be awesome for the first, you know, 30 hours because they're all brilliant, you know, and there's such a high standard of general design and coding and whatever.
Yeah, actually, that's a point that I came to on the next game.
The classic game, I think the classic game of this era will be the one that you're playing in 2 years' time still, rather than one you've, you know, moved on past, because the rate they come out these days as well. I mean, I've often commented on your somewhat self-destructive obsession with keeping up to date with current releases. It means you buy a lot of them.
Play them.
No, which means by
necessity. Sleep last night.
By necessity, because you've only got so much time.
Got to get to bed.
You've got to go through them a lot quicker, which means that this then will... If this is normal behaviour for gamers, it means this feedback will reach the development side and these games will become shorter and shorter because they know their customers have... to fit them in somehow.
Yeah, that's a very valid point because they're just the number of games being released.
So therefore, any particular title that you buck this trend for and continue to play all year as well as anything else, those will be the classics. Those will be the ones will be remembered, and those are the ones that will turn up in the compilations. You know, here are some classics you must play. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So all in all, it's not Game of the Year, but
it's
pretty damn close. It's definitely worth it. If you like heavy metal,
yeah.
If you don't like heavy metal, then don't go near it.
If you're amused by heavy metal but don't necessarily like it, that's also a good buy.
Yeah. Yes. If you appreciate heavy metal existing.
Yes.
And Jack Black is...
In general, the heavy metal theme is quite strong.
Incredibly strong, yes.
So, yeah.
Jack Black is fantastic in it, and... he's really good at the old one-liners.
Yeah. Just the demo I was playing, it was fantastic.
Okay, moving on to the next game.
Yep.
That weekend also was released Uncharted 2.
Ah, yes, this is one you've been looking forward to for ages, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can do no wrong, this. So, we're all wanting to know is, did it live up to your massively, massively overinflated expectations?
Yes.
It did. My word.
But...
Uh-oh, here we go.
As I get into in a bit,
yeah.
there are things about it which is... not quite as good as they could be, but I wasn't expecting them to be.
So this is basically your Indiana Jones type lad,
yeah,
chasing after treasure.
Basically, it's a male Lara Croft, right. Which all the benefits you get from that because you don't have the stupid fixation on breast size.
Yes, right.
And it doesn't get quite so embarrassing when putting a character in front of
a bloke for feminism there, but yeah, whatever.
you really reckon?
I don't think no. Lara Croft's probably not a great.
No,
is it post feminism? Is that where it goes?
The female,
I don't know.
The female characters
I'm bluffing
it,
extensively. Yes,
are brilliant and a brilliant case for doing female characters writing games.
Okay, that's what we like to see.
And we've only got one person from Farscape in this particular game.
Right.
It's the name Claudia Black. Yeah,
I think
it's all blacks.
Right.
So Jack Black and Claudia Black. Uh-huh. The other games can't match then. That means one of these has
come
to
on
be
back
it.
In the room. Focus.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. It has the best acting and animation in cutscenes that I've ever seen.
Really? Because those can often let an otherwise massive title down, can't they? A huge blockbuster title with Super Marionation for cutscenes.
I put my animated brother in front of it, and he couldn't find anything wrong with it.
Wow. High praise indeed.
Yes. The skin looks right. It doesn't have that shiny skin.
Or the weird stretching around awkward limbs.
When you get in the game, though,
yeah,
Gravity animation may not quite stand up.
Oh, interesting.
There's a bit at the start where you're learning all the controls and doing stuff. The tutorial is this brilliant level. We're on a train which has gone off the edge of a cliff and you're climbing up.
Oh, right.
And there's a bit where you're climbing up a pipe. Uh-huh. And when you do that, his lower legs have an extra joint.
Ooh.
It feels
uncanny
quite
valley alert.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the animations in it, because it's a jumping platformy game, the animations are quite hard to get right, and you do notice the way that it transitions between them. It looks quite clunky.
Yeah.
Now, I think other games have done it better. Assassin's Creed has done it better.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with the sword fighting in there, actually. I mean, it can be quite frustrating, but just the way you fluidly move from opponent to opponent, and the blocks and the counter moves, they all seem to work with
it. You never feel you're going from animation A to animation B through a transition.
It just seems very fluid. It reminds me a lot of Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
Sands of Time, specifically.
Yeah.
And combat in there.
I just don't think that Uncharted 2 matches them on the internal animation.
Right.
And you've also got the strange glowing mouth problem that everyone has.
Right.
Too many games have this, where the teeth seem to be glowing from an inner light source.
Because they're a different model, presumably.
I don't know what it
That's
is.
That's how you handle the lip syncing, I think. But I don't know.
No, the lighting wouldn't matter for that.
Oh,
but
I don't know.
It's like there's a light source in the mouth where the teeth look bright.
Glowing teeth.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And now I've mentioned it, you're going to notice it.
Yeah, it's ruined it for everyone now, isn't it?
And
so are these things minor enough
these
to
are
be
minor,
overlooked?
The next thing is, in the second chapter, you spend an awful lot of time going on about not killing people.
Right.
And you're going up against guards in a museum where you're trying to steal something.
Right. So you sneak them up?
These are innocent people and they're sneaking them up and you're knocking people out. Okay, we'll get over the point. When you knock someone out, you are actually hurting them and they're not all going to wake up.
Yeah.
But we'll ignore that. And then there's a point where you get past that and for the first time you get given a tranquilizer dart gun.
Mm.
And you take out two people on the ground, and there's two people on the walkway up 10 foot, and you and your AI partner both shoot them, and they fall to the floor. And the moment they do that, killed them accidentally.
10 foot drop, unconscious, no problem.
Yeah, not going to probably kill them.
I think I saw a Penny Arcade cartoon of a similar theme, yeah.
And then there's a bit later on where you're climbing up the side or outside of the building over a cliff, and there's a guy up on the roof, and you're climbing up, and you grab him and...
That's what the Penny Arcade cartoon was, yeah.
Did the level designers not talk to the cutscene writers? It's a fundamental error. The moment that happened, I just thought...
I'm just a badass with a gun.
I just thought straight to the director's commentaries on Half-Life.
Mm.
Thinking, Valve would never have done that.
Mm.
Just seems like a strange... not really planned out right.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I sometimes worry about dropping when I do the assassinations of archers on the roofs in Assassin's Creed. They're facing outwards, and I hit them from behind, and I worry that they're just going to drop into the street, cause a massive alarm, and everything. But they tend to fall backwards, which is quite helpful.
Yeah.
So perhaps that's on purpose or not. But
apart from that, slightly inconsistent. The game itself doesn't seem that improved from the first one.
Right.
The storytelling and the animation, yes, that is much better for the cutscenes.
Uh-huh.
But the actual game itself, it still, when it comes down to it, is a Tomb Raider-style jumping game matched into that Gears of War-style shooting.
Rectilinear blocks everywhere. You can only jump one of eight ways, that sort of thing.
And the levels are incredibly linear.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a bit I've got to shimmy across. How am I going to get to that? And you'll work your way up. And it feels old-fashioned to me. Because I've been playing games like Assassin's Creed and Prince of Persia, Mirror's Edge, where they've done all this so much smoother.
There are many, many different ways to move around a particular city block.
And you're not basically doing move, 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 move. You're doing a flowing series of moves to get
somewhere. This whole parkour thing that tends to be the fashionable way to have your character move.
And when you get thrown into something which is slow and quite plodding, and I get to rooms and I think, oh, God, another climbing level.
Oh, right.
Which, that's not really selling it to me. Now, I think the problem...
So, is the core gameplay very reminiscent of the first one? Is that what they've done? They've just tried to make the first game again, but better and with a different story?
Yeah.
Rather than explore new ways of playing the game?
They fixed the fighting.
Yeah.
The climbing doesn't seem very different to me at all, to be honest.
So more of the same, but a bit better, rather than something new.
Yeah. And I was thinking back to why we got this style of climbing.
Yeah.
And what I think it is, we lost something when... Tomb Raider took the original Prince of Persia's idea.
Yeah.
Because the original Prince of Persia was flowing movement, jumping.
This would be a sideways 2D Prince of Persia back in the mists of time there.
And you had to complete it in a certain amount of time, and you're always rushing through, and it was smooth. And when we went to Tomb Raider, we lost that. And I think the games have just started claiming that back, but this hasn't.
Yeah, so it's sort of held on to previous design techniques rather than attempt to experiment with something a bit new.
And I know it's sacrilege.
It is a sequel, though, I suppose. Yeah. You keep that kind of stuff for an entirely new and different game, I suppose. But
I know it's sacrilege, but it's not my game of the year because of that.
Really? Because you had such high hopes for this.
It's a great game.
I hope you've
learnt
the lesson of disappointment.
It's a brilliant game. It is the best game on the PlayStation.
Oh, fair enough.
By far.
Mm.
It's just...
Other games.
It didn't move the genre on.
It
doesn't really contribute anything beyond what it contributes to games as a whole with the cutscenes.
So if you liked the first game, you'll like this one. But if you're looking for something entirely new and different...
If you didn't like the first one, you won't like this one. Mm. But most people will like this one.
Okay, fair enough.
Because I don't think...
You're quite picky, aren't you?
It just seems a shame that it could have been this outstanding thing, and it's just a great thing.
Fair enough, yeah. Somewhat lost potential there, perhaps.
Yeah.
Right, but still worth the money, you think?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, excellent.
Yes. Next.
Yes.
God, this weekend's games. Forza 3.
I'm glad you took time out to do the podcast, yeah.
Forza 3.
Forza 3.
Forza.
Forza.
That's it, pronounce it.
Is it? Oh, right, I stand corrected. So, racing game.
Yeah, racing game.
Sorry, I'm listening.
Have you ever played one?
I've played Burnout Paradise. That's about as racing as I get.
That's
I'm afraid.
Crashing game.
Yeah, it's a crashing game.
Looks gorgeous.
Okay.
Brilliant driving.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to see how Gran Turismo ups the ante.
Ah, so is this a sort of long-running grudge match with Forza franchise and Gran Turismo?
Gran Turismo sort of disappeared off the map.
Okay.
A version or two of Forza ago.
Uh-huh.
And hasn't released anything for a while. And Forza's been the console realistic driving simulation game.
Right.
That's so been moving on.
Distinctly not Burnout or GTA. Yeah. Games where you're just throwing a dodgem car about and
it's games where you can adjust your brake bias and your winglet settings.
Wow. So you actually have like all the high performance diagnostics and settings you'd find in proper racing.
Now, right. the brilliant thing this game brings that's over the second one is you can ignore all that. There's now a button where it says, looks at what car you're in, what class are you in, because it's all bracketed performance-wise,
right.
And looks at that money you've got, and upgrades your car the best it can be to still be valid for this race using the cash you've got.
Sort of working within the rules to...
Yeah. Uh-huh. So you don't have to think about any of the complex... This is how I want to change stuff.
Right.
But you can, if you want. You can then go in and do it. And you can.
I see. So you can do all right with the basics, but if you want to put the time in learning how it all works, you can do much better.
But my driving style tends to benefit from having wings on the car.
Right.
Because once I put the wings on, I then get the grip I need for my driving style.
Right.
And I can
late on the brake into the turn, is it?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Funny that. Yeah, and I can ignore the lack of top speed that I get, because putting the wings on creates more downforce and means you don't go as fast.
But you turn much better.
But I can do the corners better, and I can outbrake people better.
Right,
and
which
gives
works
me
with your particular but way of driving.
So far, the auto selecting of updates, which I've tried, haven't done that.
Ah.
They haven't given me wings,
I'm
not sure they ever will, because unless the car's got them built in.
So quite an in-depth sort of experience, more than just hold down the trigger and try and hold on to the end of the race. You've really got to sort of put the thought into
if you
how
know
you're
what you're
drive.
Doing and are doing it properly, you can put an awful lot of effort into setting up cars to match how you drive them.
Mm.
Or you can just play it like an arcade game if you want.
Mm. So quite a specific appeal there, I suppose, but for those who want that kind of control, this would be brilliant. Yeah.
They managed to branch across them quite happily.
Mm.
You can play it as an arcade game.
Yeah. This is it, arcade versus simulation, I suppose. Yeah.
There's also the rewind function.
Okay.
Which has taken a hint from the Codemasters racing game.
Which was Grid, was it?
Grid and Dirt 2.
Seen you play that. That's right, yeah.
It's a bit different. It seems to only take you back one chunk of time, which I think takes you to just before the start of the corner you're on.
Okay. So you've really got to be quite quick to hit it if you need to use it. Otherwise,
you can go back multiple chunks.
Oh, I see.
But with something like Grid and Dirt, you can stop at any moment you want.
So they've gone with more a sort of checkpoint-based thing rather than reversing time full on.
It reverses time, but only in distinct chunks, discrete right. chunks.
Okay.
Now, I've had a conversation with somebody saying he doesn't like the idea of this because it's cheating.
It seems like just cheating. The idea of rewinding it
yeah.
at all.
Because you stuff up a corner. You go in too hot into a corner,
yeah.
go wide, and everyone overtakes you.
Mm.
And you can just fix that now.
Well, clearly that won't work in multiplayer, though.
You don't get it in multiplayer.
No, exactly. You can't rewind everyone's race.
If you did. That'd
be very annoying, I think.
I'm doing this corner until I get it right.
The one example of that I saw that went really badly was Neverwinter Nights. So I'm just tangenting wildly here for a moment. There's a spell there at the very top end of the Wizards called Time Stop, which I believe exists in the norm, in the proper rules and everything. But clearly you need a quite on-the-ball DM to be able to administer that properly. And all it did in Neverwinter Nights when you go online with other people is it just stops the game. It force pauses it for everyone. And this was like a public server that there were about 30 different people on, and I was completely miles away from anyone else. So I was just sort of pottering around in some place, and the game just pauses completely for no reason at all. So, yeah, time stopping in a multiplayer setting, bad idea.
Was it Gears 2 as well? If the host goes into a menu, it pauses, I think.
Well, that's not so bad if it's just you and one other person who presumably you're on voice with as well. You can tell them you're doing it. But if it's some sort of public server or pickup group, that's going to get very annoying very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then I suppose the danger is you can become too dependent on the rewind. And when you take it online, you're screwed.
Yeah. But I don't think you're going to get that many casual races online, because I think it gets very harsh very quickly.
Right. Very high performance and, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And knowing the stats and all that sort of business.
Yeah. There's a nice selection of racetracks.
Oh, good, good.
Which all look gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
And some are real.
Yeah, I saw some TV adverts for it, and I don't know how much of it was pre-rendered and how much of it was game
footage.
It's all
in-game.
If that is what the game looks like, it looks incredible. It really does.
Not that you notice.
No.
You're too busy driving.
Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of do wonder about... sometimes when I'm playing Burnout Paradise, I'll just stop or potter along at 15 mile an hour looking around with the camera, and it does seem fairly well detailed. But then you think, well, how much effort do you put into something that's just going to flash by and not even be recognised by the... And particularly with courses rather than an open world city sort of setting. If you're just going round and round very, very fast, how much time and effort do you put on the surroundings?
Some of the tracks are the same tracks as in the last game.
Okay.
And I was driving through noticing new stuff around the edge.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, they put a pond in there now. I don't think that'll be the same one.
As you sail into it.
Yeah. As I sail around the corner and fell badly. Using my patented use the car in front of me to slow down braking technique.
Right.
The amount of damage my car gets.
Yeah, I bet the sponsors love you.
Yeah. There's still got the... really nice livery technique where you can make your own paint jobs and graphics.
That's all very important.
I tried making a logo for the podcast and it didn't work. I'm not that good. You can buy stuff. There's an auction house there. You can buy and sell cars and graphics and videos and stuff with other players.
I see. Yeah. Sort of for Sony points or...
Well, no, for in-game cash.
Oh, but you
can tune up a car that does really well,
yeah.
Sell it at a profit, and somebody might buy it.
Oh, I see. What's another player on an entirely different...
Yeah.
Oh, that's quite clever, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, that side of it. Seems to work quite well.
Hmm.
And yeah, not what else I can say really.
So how does that hold up? Because you've got quite a few of these serious finger quotes racing games, not counting the burnouts and that sort of thing. How does it hold up against previous stuff you've already got? Is it the best one you've got so far?
It's the best one made so far.
Right. So possibly a must buy for the racing enthusiast.
I think it is. Yeah.
Good.
The interesting thing is with Gran Turismo coming out next year.
Well, do you hold on for that, or do you get this?
Well, one's Xbox and one's PS3. So that's
there's your choice made already, I suppose. But if you've got both,
it'd just be interesting to see if Gran Turismo does actually manage to be noticeably better.
It must be getting to the diminishing returns now.
Exactly.
With the racing
simulation. It's really
simulation
hard to do.
Game.
You can make your graphics look perfect. Okay, that's great. You can make your driving model great. Yeah, okay. Those are all tweaks.
Spend
then you've got to add other
and
stuff
months
that people
and
notice.
Millions of dollars making the reflection of a polished bonnet look fantastic. And at the end of the day, has that really enhanced the gameplay at all? I mean, where can you go? How can you take it to the next level?
The stuff like the addition recently of arrows on the track to say when you need to go faster or slower, and racing line to take as a driving aid.
For instance.
And games have that now. That sort of stuff gets brought in, and I think Gran Turismo has it.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I know it does because it had it in the demo thingy. yeah, just
how
I don't
much
know.
Further can you enhance the experience? Yeah,
it all comes down to the packaging and what else you have around it.
The fluff, yeah.
Gran Turismo is going to have the ability to watch Top Gear, I believe.
Right.
So, yeah, you never know. But good time to be a driving fan.
Yeah. Well, they're almost perfect already by the sounds of it.
And I can pretty much guarantee that of the games being released at the moment, this is the one I'm going to get the most hours out of.
Right.
Which makes it a pretty strong contender for my Game of the Year.
Right. Okay. Well, actually, we'll have to do a proper Game of the Year at the end of the year. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd say it's pretty much probably a 10 out of 10 for the same reason that for the reasons that Uncharted wasn't. They do innovate enough, they do bring enough to it, and they do move the genre onwards.
Right.
And I'm not noticing any noticeable flaws.
Interesting. Well, maybe those will become apparent over longer periods of play, but yeah, sounds very good.
Yeah. Last game.
Okay, what else we
got? Did I leave to last? Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there's this little RPG thing.
Yeah.
Rubbish little RPG.
Uh-huh.
Cartoony, boring graphics. Yeah, Borderlands.
Borderlands, yeah. So everyone's going mental about this, and I've done no research whatsoever.
No, see, this is a game I decided I was going to hate from the beginning, because it was obviously not going to work.
Uh-huh. In what way was it supposed to be working?
Well, it was going to be right, you know. It's an RPG which plays like an MMO, drop-in co-op so you can play with your friends at any time.
Mm.
Yeah, obviously not going to work at all.
Almost sort of Fable experience, I suppose.
Yeah, but so much better.
Right.
Yeah, my scepticism was completely misplaced.
So the game very very receptive to this then.
The game looked I didn't sleep last night.
You got to stop doing that. You're going to like die during a show or something. I'll have to fill for the rest.
The cartoony graphics look gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
The plot's quite good.
I saw some. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced. I mean, maybe it's just a getting used to it.
You're just a graphical snob.
Well, that's possibly it, yeah. I mean, I just don't really dig the idea of just give everything a thick black border just to make it look comic-y. I don't know.
It did a lot more than just that.
Yeah?
You can see individual line marks on the rocks and stuff, whether they've been drawn.
Mm,
yeah. I think that you need to explore non-realistic graphics, because you can't just go chasing down the uncanny valley.
Perhaps this is one way to avoid how do we make our graphics look even more realistic. Answer, we can't, so why not? Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is one of the often stated reasons that World of Warcraft does as well as it does, is that they've decided not to try and make everything look really realistic. They've gone for the cartoon stylized route, and it works well. But yeah, so the cel shading experience in here, then. See, it reminded me of Fallout for some reason.
I'm
totally ignorant.
It's set in a desert and it's a bit post-apocalyptic.
There was a lot of corrugated iron around the place. Yeah.
Yeah. You did actually make a point earlier, which I think could well be true. Did they choose the cel shading after seeing Fallout?
I'm just wondering. Yeah. Was it meant to be a post-apocalyptic thing, and then Fallout came along and they thought, ooh, better rewrite some of this. So it's like a colonization of an alien planet gone awry, is it?
Yeah. The alien planet's called Pandora,
uh-huh.
And you're looking through a vault to see what's in it. This is going to end well.
Plot warning. Yeah. Uh-huh. Subtle.
Yeah.
I see what they did there.
And my, does it play like an MMO?
Yeah.
You've got 50 levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, character with levels.
Standard RPG so far.
Yeah.
You've got all the side quests and stuff.
Yeah.
You've got the ability.
Quest journal,
yeah.
With all the quests ranked in colour order of difficulty based on level.
Yeah. Items are colour-coded depending on their...
So you were very excited when you saw a purple item earlier. When you ran through a bunch of ant, lion, spider, lion, ant things.
Well, I was desperately trying to buy the class upgrade thing that gave me +7 ammo regen.
It's all about the stats.
Oh, the class upgrades are brilliant. They are these items that each class use.
It has classes?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Which buffs your abilities in certain ways.
Uh-huh.
And I've got one which is a +20 XP, +20% XP for the team one.
Oh, yeah.
I've been using that to try and level up a bit.
Uh-huh.
I've also got one which boosts the party's shield.
Oh, yeah.
But the one that I really like is the one that gives me +7 ammo regen.
How are you doing that, by the way?
Ammo ticks over 1 a second now. Brilliant.
Yeah, that must drastically alter the way you play the game. Yeah.
I was running out of ammo. I was getting a bit annoyed at that. So now I've got this. Not so much.
Get a new bullet every second.
Yeah.
Just need to run away and hide for a brief spell and come back firing, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very much a, well, yeah, MMO, but with one player, as far as I could tell.
Well, you can drop in your friends.
So how many does that support? Is that
four, I believe.
Four, is it?
Let me look the back up the box
there, yeah.
Keep talking.
Yeah, so lots of the driving level, I noticed.
Co-op, 2 to 4.
It's got vehicles.
Oh, it's got vehicles, yes. One vehicle.
One vehicle.
It's sort of got the Halo driving model. Too keen on, where you drive forwards and you can look. So, and you will drive, if you push forwards and look to the right, it will drive to the right.
Mm-hmm. Lots of absolutely mental people in wrestling masks and bare chests chasing you for some reason. Are they the Reavers of the piece, are they?
It does feel an awful lot like Firefly. Yes. They're the Reavers. You're on this distant half-terraformed
planet
where law and order's not that good, and you're running around doing jobs.
Despite it being the distant space future, they all live in tin shacks. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely... if there is a Firefly MMO, this is it.
Fair enough.
So much. It's more likely than the real Firefly MMO.
So I saw you driving around one particular level called Rust something or other, Rust Valley, something like that. I can't remember what it was called, but lots of giant piles of junk and detritus littering this place. Does it get all more alien planety anywhere else, or is it basically very sort of Fallout-esque in its styling?
I've just, in the plot, only got to the bit where there's the first bit with the aliens.
So you're quite early on then, really, eh?
Reasonably. I'm level 24, maybe.
Oh, halfway then, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but I have spent an awful lot of time exploring and doing all the side quests.
Right.
I've actually... without realising that I could do this. I got the achievement for doing all the quests in the first area.
Well, that's interesting. So you going off and doing something that wasn't driven by knowing about an achievement.
The achievement told me I shouldn't go around looking to see if anyone had anything else for me to do.
You are done here.
Yeah. Move on!
There is a whole rest of the game out there, 20G. Yeah.
Yeah.
So obsessing a little, then?
No, not at all.
Fair enough. But you're very impressed with it, clearly.
I had to get these wind turbines up and running properly.
People were depending on you.
Yeah.
Mm.
One of them was caked in guano, and I had to shoot it off. I'm not sure how that works.
It sort of reminded me a bit of that Red Faction that you were showing me as well,
yes.
With all the canyon driving.
It's very much like Red Faction.
It's sort of half-assed, badly terraformed planet that's just about got air, because it would be annoying to have to wear a spacesuit the whole time. But apart from that...
it has a very similar feel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I would imagine that after they played Red Faction 2, they also felt a little bit worried.
Mm.
But that's a totally different style of game when it comes down to it.
So it looks like it's got a lot of mileage in it, almost Oblivion, that sort of feel to it, open world.
I
don't, obviously sci-fi,
yeah.
But
yeah, it's got that feel to it. It does feel like Fallout. I don't know if it's going to last as long as, say, Fallout Wolf. So I don't know if there is that many quests, but
yeah,
they have committed to doing DLC, so
there's
some coming out before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Can't recommend the game enough. Buy it.
Oh, yeah, I've got to buy it, because you've got a whole bunch of multiplayer achievements to farm, clearly.
I've got other friends.
Right, fine.
Andy or Mark will help.
Yeah.
But no, I think you'd really enjoy it.
I think I might have to. Yeah, because at the moment I've been just borrowing stuff. The only thing I bought for the 360 is that Kingdom of Kieflings as a download, so I think I ought to probably buy a title or two, you know, support the industry.
You're a rubbish consumer.
Yeah.
Didn't pay for your console.
An unlikely series of accidents that got at me in the first place. Mm. I bought a clippy innie keyboardy thing.
Yeah, okay.
See, I'm doing my bit.
Yeah, brilliant game.
Good stuff.
Don't know if it's Game of the Year worthy, but...
Well, we'll have to have this conversation nearer the end of the year. And
have to see what I've been playing.
Do a big old roundup, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, I guess I don't play anything else. I must have played other games. Oh, I played a bit more of the South Park Tower Defence game.
Oh, yeah? How'd that going?
I hate Tower Defence games.
Right, good.
But moving I like on. That game. It's quite fun.
Right.
I don't know. It's probably just...
You been in LOTRO at all?
Yeah, I didn't really do anything when you guys went there. I did a bit of the running around,
it's well,
faces at
drop
NPCs.
Drop everything for the seasonal events. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, no, it hasn't been a big MMO.
Well, I've really not touched my PC... apart from my regular static group MMOs, it's quite worrying how quickly I've become this console gamer.
Shocking, really.
And this is probably what I was afraid of all along, and why I didn't bother wanting to try it. I was afraid of what it would turn me into.
I sort of knew what it would turn you into.
So predictable. Let's do a Twitter question.
Oh, go on then.
Yes, right. Well, this week...
got the mouse.
No, you can drive.
Oh, you're scared of driving now.
I know. Well, I keep closing it, and it's your Mac. It hates me. which is mutual, I must say. So, podcast question. Off to Eurogamer next week. What do you want us to cover? List here. And I put a link to the Eurogamer's page where they're showing a big old list of what they're showcasing. This is the Eurogamer Expo in London. It's a week's time. In fact, by the time you listen to this, it's probably the day after.
I will probably put this out on the Thursday so people can download it and listen to it on the way.
On the train. Yeah. Fair enough. So, yes, we're off to London to go and see a whole bunch of games in a big hall somewhere. Courtesy of a magazine.
Online magazine,
yes. Mostly it's going to be a big excuse to meet up with people and get drunk, I think, probably. So
oh, definitely.
I should be getting the train. So let's see then. But we're going to try doing a bit of proper little reporty things. Maybe more of a coherent show this year than last show, which was basically just 2 hours of us in the pub talking any old rubbish. So let's see then.
Even pubs won't be quiet. You need to make everyone else there shut up so you can record.
Well, you can apologise for sound quality in advance.
No, so, I'm better this
Kirith Kadachi says, new Super Mario Brothers Wii, and has an evil laugh at the end there. So, right, we're going to write them down. Let's have a list. Yeah. Itinerary for the...
knocks over a can of Coke.
for the big day out. It's going to be open from 11 a.m. through to 8 p.m, so we should have time to cover pretty much everything in there and still have time to go and get drunk in a pub nearby.
I actually want to see the Super Mario Brothers game.
I'm very ambivalent, but I'm just fascinated. I have this morbid curiosity about the Wii and the Wiimote and the balance board, so we'll have to have a look. Bevis says we should cover Oeddie in a big sheet so he can pretend to be a ghost. Yes, I see what you did there. That's not quite what we meant with cover. Tepetastic says, cover me, I'm going in. Kicks down the pub, bakery, random house door. I think you need to cover Tepetastic with a blanket to keep him subdued like a budgie, says Bevis.
Oh, this is going to be a long day.
Not that I mind, but
I'm going at it constantly.
Let's see, Welsh Troll, here we go. The increased direction of games to us DLC to hold players' attention for longer. That and Left 4 Dead 2. Brains! Okay, put Left 4 Dead 2 down and we'll also try and find out a bit more about any DLC. I don't know if really that's the sort of thing you'll find.
Probably not.
Ackley says, I want to see a video of you two playing and singing I Wanna Hold Your Hand on Beatles Rock Band. No, I demand it, he puts
well,
in capitals.
Tough.
Well, no, we have to do what the listeners say, you know. We're nothing without our listeners, so I'm going to have to find us a guitar game with vocals.
If there's one there and there isn't a long queue, then we may consider it. Oh, I'll be filming. A shame.
We'll have to draft in the limited edition boys well. I think they're coming along too.
Oh, yeah. Okay, just see Matt on vocals. I'm sure he's got brilliant singing voice.
Eric Stjoe wants to see Forza Motorsport 3, Left 4 Dead 2 and Star Trek Online, or OFC. Does that mean of course? I think it does. As it's just about the only MMO I see in the list. Also, Mass Effect 2. Mass Effect 2, got that?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, I'm quite pleased. I mean, considering last time there wasn't any MMOs at all and Jumpgate Evolution Alpha client was only there by accident or a missed booking or something.
Isn't there this year?
Are they showing off this year?
No, they're not. The game was meant to have released in June, and it's not showing this year.
Yes, we may have to look into that a bit more.
I'm wondering if that game's ever coming out.
Mm, yeah.
Anyway.
He also wants to see a video of us two singing I Wanna Hold Your Hand on Beatles Rock Band. Right, okay. I think peer pressure mounting here a bit. Dr. Toreg wants to see Dragon Age. Is that Dragon Age Origins? Is that going to be there?
I don't know.
I think that's what he means. We'll have to see. So, looks fun, so try to get the cheat codes for it. I demand God mode. Righto. I'll have to see if there's any development staff on hand to accost.
Probably not. It's all going to be publishing.
It'll be the publishing people, won't it? The
publishing droids.
Yeah, marketing hirelings. Yeah. Let's see. Syntax says you should visit the Global Agenda booth. Will this be the successor for Disenfranchised Planet side players? Yes, Global Agenda. Make a point of visiting that. It's not quite an MMO. Sort of MMO FPS lobby.
It's an MMO.
Yeah.
Everything's an MMO now.
Everything's an MMO.
Borderlands is an MMO.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. We'll have a look at that. We got Sean MC74, Dragon Age. Yeah, we got that. Mass Effect 2. Yeah, Star Trek Online. The games he's interested in.
It's going to be playable. Star Trek Online.
Matt wet
himself hearing it, and I can guarantee Matt, you'll be playing Star Trek Online later.
I think that's going to be a very popular stand. That we're going to have to do a lot of elbowing to get through. Might even have to drop. Have to do a bit of name checking. Do you know who I am? All of that.
We'll send Matt in. He can aggro them all.
Let's see. Arbitrary Genius says Fairy Tale Fights, of course. What?
Fairy Tale Fights.
Is that even a game? Okay. And Brutal Appraisals of People You Meet, since I can't go. Oh, It'd be a shame to miss you. But yes, we'll be talking a lot behind two people and also behind their backs, probably.
Oh, excellent.
On the next podcast.
We can review the people. We can interview someone and review them.
To reviews the people. Uh-huh. No pressure then. Enlightened One says, Super Yum Yum Baby Rescue. Sounds very strange and I'm curious. Have a great time there. Well, we'll certainly do our best. Super Baby, what? Yum Yum there? Race? Rescue? Yes. Make a note of that. DM Osborne there, follow Fridaying us because we're going and he's going and there's a whole load of other people going as well. We're gonna have to sort out some sort of how are we going to recognise each other thing.
Well, I was planning
big stick.
I was going to stand near the tall guy with the hair that really needs cutting.
Right, okay. I'm not even going to retaliate. I don't know where to begin with some abusive comments about your
basically
appearance.
Look for the short guy and the tall guy. Yeah. Probably both of us carrying the stuff that looks like tasers. That'll
yes.
be us.
Well,
or
right.
that will get you killed.
Or it's security. Yes. Lost Ludwig, he wants to see Dante's Inferno. Oh gosh, and Mass Effect 2. Best of luck, wish I could go, he says. Yeah, Dante's Inferno, I think we're going to be pointing and laughing at that. Hopefully they're going to
no,
do
it's going to be a good game.
It's going to be a good game, is it?
But as somebody mentioned on Twitter, I can't remember who, I really do look forward to seeing what stupid, misguided bit of marketing they do.
Yes, they're famous, of course, for promoting at a previous show, Acts of Lust. You were supposed to go and like grope a booth babe and then photograph it on your phone and put it on Twitter.
They also did a fake religious demonstration against the game.
Right, good, good. That's what we like to see. Let's see, Hitchy, I'd cover Star Trek Online, but I'm not going. Whatever you decide should be fine. Oh, don't leave it to us. We're just going to go straight to the pub.
Yeah. you can't leave us
yeah.
to make up our own minds on anything.
Oh, new follower there. Is that Nimrod98 says, Star Trek Online, please. Yeah, I think
everyone likes Star Trek.
Lots of votes for that. Well, they are, you know, this is an MMO podcast, apparently.
Is it?
So lots of people listening will want to know about the MMOs on the show.
And Star Trek.
And Star Trek Online. Ha ha.
Because the thin possibility that it could be a good game.
Well, yeah.
It doesn't look bad so far.
Well, massively running a lot of articles lately about new bits and pieces about it, new spaceships and how the stuff's going to play. So that's a good place to check. Let's see, Doc Chaos, check out Saboteur and find out if it's an updated version of the Spectrum Classic of the same name. That was fantastic. I had Saboteur 2 for the Spectrum. Very good. It was.
I've actually been wondering the same thing myself.
I
haven't got around to checking and finding out.
Oh, we'll answer those questions next week as well then, I think. What's Dr. Ture going on?
He's going all Blade Runner.
going all Blade Runner. Right, okay. And I think that's it, really, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So it's going to be a fantastic day out. We're going to make it so, I've decided.
Yeah.
So,
I see what you did there.
Make it so. Yeah. I didn't even know I did that. Oh, fantastic. But yes, I'm going to put lots of stuff on the vanhemlock.com blog.
Yes.
I got the plug in, yeah. See? Yeah, about where we're going to be, what we're going to do, who meeting who and so on, and recognition signs and secret handshakes and all of that. And, it should be an interesting day out.
Should indeed.
We're going to bring both recorders, aren't we? It's going to be...
Yeah.
So we can capture twice the awesome.
Yeah.
Indeed. Right. So, is that about it?
I think so,
you
yeah.
Your whiteboard? Just says Taken on there. I
watched Taken last night.
Taken? What's that?
It's a Liam Neeson film.
Right.
I've never seen it before.
And?
It's a computer game.
Right.
It has exactly the same pacing and plot as a computer game, and he's brilliant for it.
Right. So there's one to watch for the films there. Excellent. All right, what did you learn this week?
I learnt that... I actually didn't learn anything. I was too busy playing games.
Games can't teach you anything. Well, I learnt that there are two ways to advance through a dungeon in DDOU. You can send the rogue in front, or you can send the paladin in front. Either way, that all the traps get dealt with. We ended up in this extreme difficulty dungeon at the end of the night on Friday, and there was one particular room that looked a bit fishy. And, of course, as a ranger, I got the bow, so I always go at the back, make sure everyone's caught up, that sort of thing. Well, that's my excuse anyway. In runs the paladin, and the whole room, there wasn't a single available surface in this, like, 20-foot room that didn't have a spike come out of it. And then, to cap all that, about 15 huge jets of flame came out the ceiling as well. The most monumentally impressive trap I've ever seen, and I'm guessing our paladin still is going to go first. So with that, we'll see you next time,
and we'll see some of you on Friday.
See ya.
Goodbye.